irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Justin Nimmergood.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Happy Monday. Happy after 4th of July. And it's another beautiful, beautiful day here in California. How's everything out there in beautiful South Lake, or I guess, you know, rather Dallas-Fort Worth there today, Bruce?
Well, it's getting better. It started out kind of rainy and cloudy, but it's drying up and the sun's out and feels like Houston.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Feels like Houston, he says.
Feels like Houston. Yeah, that boy, that's fighting words up here. But I can say that because I'm from Houston. But yeah, it's kind of humid and stuff. So, did you have a relaxing or a good fourth? Did you see any fireworks? Yeah. I know they recommended no fireworks, but I saw the bootleg fireworks in LA that people were shooting anyway.
It was a really interesting fourth, I guess is the best way I can put it. Cause you know, my girlfriend and I, we went to, down to Balboa, like on the peninsula, Newport Peninsula, and which was a great time. It was completely, a shit show as expected. I suspected that, you know, more people would be wearing their masks and social distancing, but nope, not so much. I mean, the cops weren't even wearing their masks on Saturday, to be honest. It was just kind of wild. And the night before, actually, Balboa had, or part of the peninsula had flooded from like this, the tidal waves, I guess, you know, crept up too high on the shore or whatever. And flooded, a couple inches of flooding there on the peninsula. So that was kind of wild. We were on the opposite end of the peninsula from that, but nonetheless, it was good. It was good though. You know, always good to be out and always good to be around, you know, people that are sort of in their element and enjoying life and, you know, all that was good. And then just kind of kicked it, took it easy yesterday. So, yeah, that was what I was up to. What about you? Did you stay in town, go out of town?
No, what I had a coaching assignment in Nashville, and I went to a horse event, and it was really interesting because you had the COVID-19 coordinator and people had their golf carts watching the horses do their thing and controlled entry, and everybody had to be temperature tested and stuff like that. But man, Nashville was real pretty and just beautiful weather and nice and cool in the evening and just a lot of greenery and folks were really friendly and so it was good to, it was an easy flight, you know, DFW. So it was good to get a little bit cooler weather and change the scenery but it's Monday, man, back to the salt mine and going to town. So
that's right. Yeah, do you have any more any trips I meant to ask you that, you know, earlier.
Yeah,
any trips planned upcoming, or are you going to be, you know, kind of conquered down for a while with COVID and the new spikes and everything that are happening?
Yeah, my mom is 92 and she's in Houston. I'm gonna have to brave it and go down there. Some stuff needs to be handled down there for her, and Houston had an incredible amount of spikes, but I mean she's kind of in a suburb, so man, I'm just gonna tiptoe in there and hopefully get back out that same day, you know, wearing the, you know, making sure everything's okay. But yeah, I just have a Houston trip and maybe one Myrtle Beach or Wilmington, North Carolina trip after that, but yeah, other than that, pretty much laying low, not my usual globe-trotting self.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's still more travel than I would say most of the country's doing. Just those couple trips. So.
Yeah. Otherwise, I would have hunkered down. I wouldn't have gone to Houston, but, you know.
Be safe. It's
absolutely.
Absolutely.
So
I understand we have a pretty interesting guest on for today.
Yeah, we have a fantastic guest on for today. You know, we talk a lot about on the show about goals and mindset and executing on your goals and, you know, being mindful and aware about your situation. And so we have a very rare and unprecedented opportunity to our guest today will remain anonymous, right? This person is still serving the back part of their federal sentence from home. You know, what's happening particularly in the Federal Bureau of Prisons is that certain individuals that meet certain criteria are eligible for home detention, so they can serve the last several years of their sentence while at home wearing an ankle monitor. And so in my discussions, and this is, he's one of my clients, obviously, or I would say he and his family are my clients, and obviously it worked out because he's at home. But what kind of struck me as I've been talking to him is the different mindsets, you know. So I want our guest to kind of cover those mindsets. And plus, you know, if we do have any callers, then we'll take questions. And of course, feel free to ask any questions, Justin, that may pop up. So anyway, without further ado, let's bring on our guest. Hello, sir. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Always good.
Okay. Thanks for coming on the show.
Very good, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. So, well, again, thank you for coming on the show and, be willing to share your experiences with our listeners. I know that this will be on the podcast and there'll be people that may be either, you know, going to prison, federal prison, that want to hear this. There may be people or family members who are hoping that their family member will be just like you and living a good life on home detention, home confinement. We'd like to thank you for coming on the show. It means a lot to us.
Not a problem. I'm here to answer any of your questions, see if I can help anybody out there.
Absolutely. Well, if you could kind of walk us through the first mindset, and that was, you know, once you got the target letter or you knew that you were going to have to self-surrender to federal prison, what was going through your mind and what were some of the fears or concerns you had in your mind before you actually self-surrendered to the BOP?
Your mindset is crazy, you know, at that point. I guess the biggest wake-up call is when you walk into the marshals the first time and, you know, they fingerprint you, and then the probation meets with you and takes your passport. You know, the mindset of, okay, this is really going to happen. I'm going to leave and, you know, go to federal prison. You know, it's, you know, and you don't know what to think of, what to expect. There is no, that I knew of, you know, book 1, 2, 3, this is the process, this is what's going to happen. You don't know, you know, really what to expect next. That's the hardest, that is by far the hardest part. And the biggest thing, you know, people should always be, you know, mindful of, that I work very hard at, is unfortunately your family, your loved ones are going through the same process. And it's, if anything, harder on them, because they just don't know what to expect. They don't know what's going to happen to their loved one, you know, that's going in the federal system. And so those days leading up to being sent to one of the detention centers to start, were terrible, to say the least. The unfortunate part, a lot of times, you know, a lot of people, and I was a little guilty of it myself, you know, crawling in a bottle. You know, the biggest thing I can say to anyone, don't be tempted by doing the wrong things. You know, spend as much quality time as you can with your family and just prepare them that everything's going to be fine. You know, it's going to work out. Everything's going to be fine. And everybody's going to work together to get through this.
Definitely a team effort. And man, if your case underscores the word team, you know what I mean? You had a good team member there with you and really drove the ball home for you. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So once you kind of now, how many institutions did you go to before you got to your final designation? How many different?
Two. The detention center, and then one of the transfer facilities.
So, now your particular crime, I'll characterize it as white collar and very, very nonviolent. How was it to wear handcuffs and all that? Was that were you in a position?
It was beyond tough. I mean, you know, when they transport you the first time and you're in a bus handcuffed, and you know, again, you're scared to death. You don't really know what to expect. You know, you see some of these crazy movies on TV, and you know, you don't know if they're what the violence is. You don't know. You really just have no idea what to expect. And you know, the first time they handcuff you and take you into detention center and put you in a cell, and you sit there for 3 or 4 hours while they process you, and then assign you to a bed. And in my case, by the time they got me upstairs, it was late at night and everybody was already in their rooms, cells, whatever you want to call them. And they put you in one with a guy you don't know. And it's like, okay, here we go. You know, this is my new reality.
There you go, man.
But, you know, it's like anything else. You just accept it. It's not the end of the world. You know, when I was at the detention center, you develop friendships with people. You know, you have to be careful. Especially in my case, someone, you know, they might figure out that I'm in some kind of businesses or, you know, something else, you know, and they might want to take advantage of you.
Right.
And, you know, you don't want to let that happen. You know, you're better off a lot of times just not talking about what you do, right, being very vague.
And before
know,
we,
I'm
before
in a get, business and got, and I got in trouble.
Right. Before you get too far down on that, I agree. You're absolutely right. And you'll do that again at your final destination. But what I want to underscore is if you're on a bus or a plane or whatever, and let's say you're kind of a low security, you know, white collar kind of guy, but that bus might have mediums, maximums. So you might be wearing the same leg irons and belly chain and handcuffs as the dude that's coming from a USP or a medium. So I just wanted to underscore that, like, just, you know, they don't, you know, you're only as good as the highest security inmate on the bus in terms of the jewelry that you're wearing, right? So I just wanted to understand, did you have to wear a belly chain or anything, or you're just cuffed?
No, belly, everything when we were on the bus.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, and there's a good point you made. When you're one of the first facilities I went to was a detention center. And there, you're in a quad. You're in a floor, if you will, with 100 people. And there are a lot of them that are, you know, like you said, from higher institutions. But, you know, they, in those situations, they have officers, or, you know, everywhere. I mean, there's at least one or two on the floor at all times. And, you know, like I said, I saw, you know, I didn't really see much violence. If you did, it was between two guys that happened to be doing something stupid.
Right. So, well, good. And it sounds like how long were you in holdover status before you got designated to your final facility?
I spent 7 months at the detention center. And then I went to the transfer facility. I was lucky, I was only there a week.
Wow.
And then I was transferred to a camp.
Okay. So you took,
and
did you take Con Air?
I was doing summer. So No, I didn't. They loaded us in a bus.
Okay.
2 o'clock in the morning, and we got to the transfer facility at 2 p.m.
Okay. Gotcha. Alrighty then.
So thank goodness it wasn't too bad. You hear some people unfortunately go through what they call diesel therapy.
That's right.
Where, you know, you'll go through three different states, and plus Oklahoma is the big transfer facility, as you know, and you'll go through there and from what I understand, it's not much fun. So,
well, I tell you what, old school diesel therapy is that bus would stop, you know, and you'd be in a county jail, mm-hmm. and you might be in a county jail in Mississippi for a while. Then by the time all your letters and phone calls catch up, and you jump back up on the bus and off you go, and now you're in some other state, you know, and you're in another jail,
yep.
Back in the day, guys could be on diesel therapy on the bus run for a year, you know, and go all the way to California, all the way up to Seattle, and then all the way across to New York, and then back all the way down. So,
one of the gentlemen I knew at the camp went to court, and he was gone for 4.5 months.
Doing diesel therapy. So I'm glad that term is still out there. That's one of the oldies but the goodies. Now I would say your case, that is a little bit longer than the average bear to get from point A to your designated facility. But I'm glad you made it, obviously, and you made it. So what was your mindset going in your first week at your designated facility? How was it for you to adjust to that, or was it a piece of cake compared to being in a detention center?
Yeah, it was a piece of cake compared to being in a detention center. If you're fortunate enough to be designated to, you know, one of the camps anywhere, it is exponentially easier. As you and I have discussed, you know, I call the camp cupcake. I'm ex-military, so... You know, it was nowhere more difficult than it was when I went through boot camp or anything else. So my first week was, thank God, you know, I'm here, because you're outside, you're walking around, there's trees, there's places to go, there's tracks, there's, you know, a tremendous amount of things to do. And you're just doing backflips because you're fortunate you now can go, you know, come up with a schedule that keeps you busy.
Right.
And that's the biggest thing. The sooner anyone that gets in the system comes up with a schedule, the better off your life's going to be.
Okay. So having a structured life is real important when you're doing your prison time in the joint, in the institution, right? Having that structure.
Without question.
Okay. So having that structure, having that routine is a very important aspect. And that's a good point, right? So how did you keep your mind focused on, how did you stay positive while you're in prison?
Well, the biggest thing, again, you know, my biggest concern to me is my family. And, I literally many times talked to too many guys that were there, because I hear them on the phone complaining to their family. And again, I'm not trying to preach, but I would sit with them and say to that person, I really wouldn't do that. We have it about as easy as, you know, in the situation we're in, we have it about as easy as we can get it, you know, in one of these places. Why make your family suffer? You know, because if they think you're hurting and they're worried about you, and or, you know, you might be hurt or you're miserable, it makes them that much more miserable. I worked hard from a standpoint of, I read it, more books are in the federal system than you won't believe it. The libraries have thousands of books because you have no way to really read them on a tablet. So reading to me is by far number one. Number two, if you're, you know, when you get in that situation, if you're ever going to get your body in shape, then that is the time to do it. Because as I told many people, if you do it correctly, you don't age while you're in the facilities. From the standpoint, let me explain why. You're sleeping, you sleep a lot because it takes up your day. You know, you're sleeping in, typically a lot more than the gentlemen are, or people that are working for a living. You're not drinking, I hope, you know, to speak of.
I hope so, and, too.
Yeah. And you can go work out. There's workout facilities. There's bikes. There's rowing machines. There's, you know, there's all the apparatus there to, you know, work to get yourself in shape.
And, what about the access to protein and the food there? Do you have access to protein? And
yeah, if you're fortunate enough, they sell protein powder and they sell chicken. And now a lot of that is changing. They decided recently, I mean, they delayed it because of the COVID, but they're taking away for some reason the microwaves in the system. So, which is brand new. And it wouldn't surprise me if it doesn't get overturned, but, so a lot of the things that you were able to buy and heat up now, you know, won't happen. Now they still have the Insta-Hot machines in the kitchen, you know, where you can get hot water to make soup or rice or whatever. But going back to your question, there's, if you're fortunate enough where you have a little bit of money to spend, you can buy protein powder, you can buy, right, you know, protein, meaning chicken, fish, tuna, yeah, pork, etc., you know, to eat, to keep a somewhat diet. You know, the last 30 days I was there, I went off all carbs. And so it wasn't that hard to do. And, you know, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but anything, the guys that work in the kitchen kind of sneak stuff out of the kitchen. So if you want a salad every day, you can get it. I mean, it's just a function of how hard you want to work at it.
Right. Right.
So. You know, and so you can set up your diet. You can set up your workout routine. If you're fortunate enough to go to a camp or, where they have work details, when I say, you know, like Unicor or, you know, other work details, get on one. Especially some of them are outside the gates. And mine was, I was fortunate, and it makes your day fly by. You know, because you get up, I would go to work at 6:30 in the morning and return about 3:30 in the afternoon. And by the time I got back and worked out and ate and did everything, my day was over.
Man.
Going to sleep, and
yeah,
it was wonderful. So
now, how often could you call your family and talk a little bit about did you do core links? Talk a little bit about your touch points with family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can call, you know, as much as you get 300 minutes a month of phone usage. And what I basically looked at is I spent 10 minutes a day talking to my family, you know, with the children I had, you know, with my children and my better half. You know, it was difficult sometimes, but the core links, you know, which is the email system, you know, really helped that immensely. Now that you're not limited, it costs money to send emails, but it's nominal. I want to say, you know, it's how long you stay on the system. So if you go in there and stay on the system for 30 minutes sending emails to people, you know, it might cost you 75, 50 cents, something to that effect. So it's not expensive. The phone system, you can set it up in it, you know, for where it's 6 cents a minute. So, you know, that 10-minute call costs you 60 cents each day. There's no real way to call collect. So you need to, by the way, one thing I will mention here, anyone that happens to be going into the system, if you bring cash in your pocket, like if you're checking into a facility, if you're self-surrendering, okay, if you walk in the gate with $200 in your pocket, they will put that on what everybody refers to as their books. They'll put that on their account. And so then you immediately have the availability of $200 to spend. The spending limit per month between, or excuse me, at the commissary, I believe was $360 a month. As far as the phones and emails, there is no spending limit. So, but if you're going into the system and self-surrendering or whatever, bring cash with you because they'll immediately put it on your account. And then you get a, you get what they call a PIN and a PAC number from your counselor, and then you can start make you add your contacts to your phone system, to your CoreLink system, and you can start making calls to it. One thing, there is a lot of, and it's nothing wrong, there's a lot of systems out there now that you can, your family can look for, that will tie a text number to your CoreLinks. And this is POPY. In fact, one of them has a .gov email address. So I think the government got involved. But I don't know, you need to go into great detail, but basically you can tie, you send out an email and they convert it to a text and send it to your loved one's phone. So I don't know if you've heard about that, Bruce, but.
Oh yeah.
That definitely is something, yeah. Yeah, there's three or four or five of them, and they cost about $20 a month, and you can send unlimited text messages, you know, instead of email. Because when you get someone elderly, they have a phone, you can send them a text message, but the CoreLinks getting logged into it and accepting those emails is not the easiest thing in the world, you know, to do. And so if you can just send a text message to someone, it makes their life a lot easier. But again, getting back to if you can get a job, get it.
Okay.
And tell your family if when you check into the system, through Western Union, you can send money. And all they need is your name and your federal ID number, which they can look up on the BOP.gov website. And if you, you know, the first time you can do it online in the Western Union app, but the easiest thing the first time, just call Western Union and say, you know, help me, walk me through this. Because I believe the code was something like Washington, D.C., the city, and I can't remember, you know, they just use an arbitrary city and state.
Okay.
I don't know. So, sorry, didn't mean to drag
on. That's okay. So let's talk a little bit about visitation. How often could you have people pre-COVID? How often could you have people visit you theoretically?
Every weekend. You could on Fridays in the where the facility where I was, it was Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It was Friday from 5 o'clock to 8:30, I believe it was. On Saturday it was from 8 o'clock in the morning till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And same thing on Sunday, 8 o'clock to 3 in the afternoon. And then holidays is the same. Any holiday, national holiday, is 8 to 3. And you go to your counselor, you get a visitation form, send it to your loved ones. They have to sign it. And what they're going to do is, you know, just so people know, they do a quick background check. On that person.
And who's typically allowed? Is it just family members? Can you have friends? Who is typically allowed in the visiting room?
Anyone that, if they knew you before you went in the system, they can come. Because it specifically says on the visiting form, did you know this person before, you know, before their incarceration? And as long as they're a friend of yours, you know, or family, they're, you know, they have to be approved by your counselor, but then they're more than welcome to come see you.
Perfect.
It's great. You know, the great way to have visits, you know, everybody obviously, you know, irons all their clothes, shines their shoes, and away you go. And, you know, it's fun because they have vending machines and that and there. So there's a lot of things we don't get on a normal day. And, you know, and they buy, you know, they're able to all day buy stuff and, you know, have a salad or have something that you haven't had in a while.
That's good. That's good. Did you have visits while, or did you rely more on phone calls? And
no, I had visits. I usually set them up about every 2 months, you know, because, you know, I always looked at it as people, you know, they have their lives now, and I'm the, you know, my situation is I'm the one who got myself stuck in here, and, you know, I don't, you know, want to be crying or whatever. I was surprised sometimes there were a lot of guys that, believe it or not, had a visit every weekend.
Right.
And I always kind of surprised me, but it was their way of it, quote unquote, escaping from the facility, you know, over the weekends.
Right. Well, another thing I want to underscore about you, is, you know, sounds like you have a good mindset. You have a routine, you got your visiting list filled out, you got money on your books, you got your email, you got your books to read, you got a job, work detail, things are clicking along. And also sounds like you never got in trouble, at least that I know of, while you were in prison.
Yeah.
How hard is it to do your own time and not be caught up in a gambling pool, a cell phone situation, some other kind of drama? Talk a little bit about, you know, being out of trouble and how you were able to do
it. It is tough. And I'll tell you, I don't think you and I ever discussed this. I ended up spending time in one of those county jails for 2 weeks. And I'll tell you a short story to bring it in. I went to work, and I worked at on a detail where we maintain part, you know, an area, okay, and cutting grass and fixing things, et cetera, et cetera. And the couple, there was 8 or 9 of us in this detail, and a couple of them apparently were smuggling stuff in. You know, I didn't, you know, it wasn't my thing. I wasn't trying to make money there for sure. And they were a building about 30 yards from where I worked. They found cell phones, booze, cigarettes, etc. Well, they took the whole detail to the county jail for 2 weeks, trying to get somebody to tell them whose it was. You know, the fortunate part is, you know, I was only there for a short period of time. Was not fun, I will tell you that. But, you know, I didn't get drugged into somebody else. You know, I got drugged into their mess, but nothing happened of it. Because everybody just kind of basically said, look, I don't know where it came from. And there wasn't any, you know, what they call a shot, an incident report written. And after 2 weeks, you know, we went back to the camp. But I told my better half, who you've spoken to many times, we were sitting Friday night in the visiting room, and she said, how crazy is it? Can you get stuff here? And I said, honey, other than you, there isn't much I can't get at the camp. And the only thing that I'll tell everybody from the standpoint, and I mean it, I've seen so many guys that think they can get away with anything, and they all end up getting caught sooner or later.
Right.
And now it depends on the warden. You know, the first warden we had there, what they did if you got caught, let's say, with a cell phone, they would send you for 6 weeks to the county Well, in this case, for this camp, they send you to a county jail. A lot of facilities have a what they call a SHU, special housing unit, which is basically you're in a cell 24 hours a day. But that's their special housing. The place where we were sent was a county jail, which was not fun at all. But the guys that, you know, they get off, you get offered anything. And again, it goes back to our earlier discussion. If they seem that you're a businessman or someone that might have means, they're immediately going to hit on you to try and get you to buy something, try something, get something, you know, whatever they can do. There's a lot of guys that are just, that's their, as they called it, their hustle, was trying to get you involved in a situation. And unfortunately, there's also a lot of jealousy. And if they see somebody doing something and they think they have something that they can't have, they immediately tell somebody. And you get drug into a situation, and it's, you know, so you go from Camp Cupcake to, you know, camp not so fun.
Now, I guess nobody asked you for papers or anything like that to make sure, you know, nobody asked you if you were a child molester or anything like that at that place, right?
Correct. Yeah. As you know, at a camp, it's, you know, known, you know, they don't allow child molesters, except, you know, a murderer, something to that effect is not going to be that. But at a low or a medium, they very well, you know, I've heard many stories of guys, you know, they literally carried around paperwork showing them. Now at the camp, you know, a lot of the guys, is, you know, as I've said, have, you know, they'll sneak phones in there. So they're on Google, you know, Googling your name to see why you're there or what you did or et cetera, et cetera.
Or their wife's on Pacer or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly.
So yeah, real quick, I'll clear up a couple things. So yeah, your situation. So when somebody goes to the hole or a county jail, that's called administrative detention. And what people don't realize is, and I know you do because you are in a form of administrative detention, is that if there's a caper and I'm going to lock up 15, 20 guys until I investigate it, or the SIS or somebody investigates it, and then I'm going to figure out who's guilty of what, and then do the incident reports and the discipline hearing officer or whatever. So the guys who I have to detain are in, you know, admin detention. But then after a while, if I don't need them, I'll send them back. You know, if I'm not going to move forward. Disciplinary segregation would be the person who is responsible for the contraband or the cell phone, was found guilty by the disciplinary hearing officer, sanctioned for so many weeks or months, disciplinary segregation, taking away good time, take away commissary. And those cell phone charges can be a 108, and man, you know, they're going to transfer them to a low. And there's been quite a few guys that transferred to a higher security institution on a disciplinary transfer, and they really kicked themselves in the butt by doing that. And I'm sure you saw a couple of those during your days there, huh?
Oh yeah. Well, that's what I was getting to. I forgot before. The prior warden would send you over to the SHU for 6 weeks and write you a shot. The new warden, where I was, you got transferred. You were going to a low. If you got caught with a phone, and there was just no ifs, ands, or buts. And they were shipped, and would send them to the transfer facility, and away they go.
Yeah. Cause I don't want to burn. Only, you know, we have contracts with those county jails. I'm burning more money sending that guy to the jail than I am, you know, having the marshals or a bus run, pick them up, put them in one of our joints. But anyhow, the other thing I want to tell you about the microwaves and why I think that's going to stand up is because there's been a lot of gang members, you know, that have scored their way down, right, from mediums to lows to camps. Well, here recently, these guys would do instead of shanks and knives, they boil water in the microwave and pour it in people's eyes and blind them. Yep. Ooh. And so it happened in some institutions out this way, and that's why they're going to do away with that, because they're using them as a weapon, as a, you know. So sorry to hear that, man.
Let me interject something there, you know, just so you know, and I'll say it to somebody that's out there. Work your butt off to get to a camp, because I didn't, in the, you know, time, the years I spent there at the camp, okay, I never saw anything like that. Nothing.
Yeah, but I mean, but so, you know, we got camps that are adjacent to some pretty mean joints. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, I'm just saying, from a standpoint, work your way down, because it gets, you know, it's reward is well worthwhile.
Yeah, and you're right, and it's a position. Your pattern score, your risk level goes down, your scores go down, minimum out or community out, and whatever you have coming that's a benefit, you can get it a lot easier from a camp bed than you can even from a low bed. So we only have about 9 minutes left, so we're not going to get to the home confinement piece, because I have a couple things I want to cover on the institution piece. And that is, look, like any organization, prison staff, or it is what it is. It's a government entity. It's a government organization, and one of the things that I remember folks talking about you is that you never were a pain in the ass to staff. You didn't have a sense of entitlement. You kind of were respectful, not kind of, but you were a seemingly respectful, go with the flow kind of a guy doing your time. Reflect on that a little bit, and how that approach is probably a lot better than throwing up unnecessary BP 8s and 9s and that kind
every
of
when the biggest thing I told everybody when they walked in the door, because when someone would show up at the camp and you meet them, and they're, if you feel they're a nice person, a good person, etc., and you want to help them, I would walk up to them and say, the biggest thing I can tell you is check your ego at the gate. You will never convince them you're right, or you'll never convince them to change their mind if that's their mindset. So the more humble and the more agreeable you can be, and it grates on you sometimes if you're in business and have done a lot of things, but it's the best way you can do it. As you know, I told you the story, you know, when we hired the people, that, you know, I don't know if you, you know, you can say if you want to help me get out of the situation I was in, being at the camp. I spoke with my lovely lady, and, you know, we made a, you know, I told her, I said, that's it. You hire these people and I'm bowing out. I'm not going to, you know, bug anybody. I'm not going to pester anybody. I'm just going to sit back and wait and let them do their job. This is what we hire these people for. And I can tell you without question, there were many guys that were very intelligent. Some of them ex-attorneys, some of them ex-doctors, some of them, you know, ex-businessmen that, you know, were signed some of the same paperwork that I did, saying they were eligible for home confinement. And they drove counselors, case managers, case unit managers, wardens, everybody absolutely bat, I'm only saying this because you said it a few minutes ago, batshit crazy. And I can promise you that myself and a couple other guys were the only ones that left that I know of in the situation I was in, having a decent amount of time left. All those guys that filed paperwork, BP-8s, BP-9s, BP-10s, BP-11s, court documents. One guy, as far as the Supreme Court, he said, they're still there filing paperwork.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And, you know, I can't tell you the wisdom in your decision. I really can't. I mean, you hired, as you indicated, a good team, and you trusted in that team. And these guys, will want to take matters into their own hands. And that's just it. That's why they're in freaking jail or prison, because that's what they tried to do. You know, like your best day got your ass in federal prison. So why don't you just kind of sit down, you know what I mean, and do what you're told, and watch the magic happen. And in your case, man, you know, you figured that out, you know, I mean, and that kind of separated you from the pack, you know, in a huge way. And next thing you know, that the magic happened.
Well, as you know, when the contracts were signed to hire everybody, you know, at the same time, you know, I was offered legal assistance. And, you know, and I specifically, as she shared with you, told my better half, sign their paperwork, do that, and do not do anything in the with the attorneys. And I'm bowing out. And like I said, I was blessed. It was the best decision I made. And you know, I can promise you, and one of the counselors I became, you know, good friends with, well, as good as you can become, you know what I mean? Well, we would talk and have coffee and whatever. And I would laugh with him and say, he knew what I was saying, but we just didn't say it, you know. But so many of these people are, you know, they're working like crazy on their job. And if you pester the daylights out of them, your paperwork going from the top of the stack to the bottom of the stack. And the more you pester them, the further, pretty soon it's going to go in the stack under their desk. You know, right. And so it does not work. You know, people will say, well, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. In this case, it is not the case, because they got plenty of guys, and the ones that are driving them crazy, it's not helping. So anyhow, enough of that, but you get the
idea. No, you know, and yeah, so no, I just wanted to underscore that. And so, but look, you know, so it sounds like you did it right. You know, to recap, you know, you braved the storm, you developed a, you know, routine, you had a full life in there, visitation, programming, work, reading books, got into physical shape, really made the most of it. Man, you know what I mean? So, like you said, there's no bills to pay, and everything's just kind of there. And yeah, you're removed from society, and that's the point of prison. But it sounds like you really harnessed it and made the most of it. And I know we got to push off now, but maybe we'll have you come back in a few weeks and talk about what it's like wearing a monitor around your ankle and having to deal. It's probably more frustrating in some respects than being in the joint. I don't know. Maybe not.
No. Okay. I have a deal with my lovely lady. If I ever complain about anything, she just says the name of the facility where I was located.
Don't say it. That's right.
And I go, and I immediately, my mouth shuts immediately. So no, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yes. So she, and look, she's part of your, a huge part of your support team in terms of organizing the team that helped you get out of there. She would check in regularly. I'll say that. She would.
Yeah, it's good.
Check in regularly on as to what was going on, and so you know, a lot of credit to her as well, to both of you. You know what I mean? You did your job, and she did her job. So.
Yeah. And you guys did your job,
and we did our job. So, yeah. Gosh, yeah. Like you said, you know, it's a team effort. You know, it's just a lot of moving parts here. So anyway, with that, man, we'll call it a day. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your experience. We'll get you on here in a few weeks. We could talk about the home detention side and you know, you've just been an inspiration to me, and you've been an inspiration to others in your wake. I do get phone calls from other families that talk about you and you're like one of the miracles, man. You're one of the COVID miracles on this deal. Yeah. So just be blessed and grateful, and I know you are, and we'll visit with you sometime soon. So,
all right, gentlemen.
All right. So, Justin, you got any?
Any questions you've got, you know, like you said, we'll come back on and do it again sometime. And any questions anybody's got, feel free, and I'll answer anything I can do to help.
Thank you. Justin.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, I know you're taking it all in. I could just feel you taking it.
And I would love to have him back on to hear more about the tools, right? Like, what sort of self-made or ready-made tools were used through the process, but just fascinating story for sure.
Cool. All right, then. Well, there it was, another fantastic episode of the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Of course, come see us on our social media, The Concierge Coaches on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. And of course, our shows are on Apple Podcast, as well as on the LA Talk Radio website. I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Justin, how can folks reach you?
My website, nimmergood.com.
All right. Well, until next week, everybody stay safe and blessed. And we'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.